What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us at Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. This is episode number 19, and tonight we're going to be digging into old newspaper archives again. Our old newspaper story site at Facebook is really taking off. We're having some really great interaction there, finding some new articles every day, and we thought we'd just share details on some of these more interesting articles and actually read over some of them. If you like the podcast, if you're enjoying what we're seeing, please join us on Facebook. Look us up, Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. Join our old newspaper stories Facebook site. And if you like the podcast, definitely, if you can, leave some comments wherever you're listening. Subscribe, leave a thumbs up, do all that good stuff, and that would be much appreciated. And we're going to just hop right into it. Here we go with old newspaper stories again, digging into some of the details.
Are you a truth seeker? Do you like hip-hop? Are you interested in the mysteries of mankind and nature and asking all those life-examining questions that demand answers? Then it may be your destiny to check out Destiny Lab at destinylab.com, where you'll find music that glorifies God and exposes the very roots and the lies and deceptions that we face today. Issues like creation versus evolution, aliens and UFOs in the spirit realm, the fallen angels and the Nephilim, transhumanism, the new age, the occult, the Illuminati and the new world order, and how all these things tie into one cohesive story and one ancient plan that is explained in the Word of God. 3 CDs are currently available at destinylab.com. You can also download both Concocted Collabos 1 and 2 for free by going to our site, which consists of all kinds of collaboration songs with other artists that are not on our CDs. Stay tuned for our 4th album, which is in the works now, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/destinylab.
Hello and welcome to Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. This is episode number 19, and tonight we're going to be talking about our Facebook site, old newspaper stories, and some updates on that, and some of the people we've met on there and networked with. And how you doing tonight, Neo?
Doing great, Ark. Doing great.
Good.
Glad we get together again.
Yeah, it's been a while. Thought we'd just kind of do a quick update here and catch people up to what's been going on with the old newspaper stories site you put together. That's really taken off. We've met some interesting people there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we put this together basically after we saw an episode of the Giant Show with the Vera brothers. And I was just kind of watching that show, and they had a little quick blurb at the beginning of the show about a newspaper article, because they were kind of just flashed a bunch of newspaper articles because he's collected like thousands of newspaper articles. And one of them said, you know, 8-foot skeleton, Salem, Oregon, which is really close to where I'm at. So I did a Google search for newspaper archives and started doing a little bit of searching. And I was just amazed on how many fascinating reports from the early 1900s are out there.
Yeah.
And so I decided to put together a Facebook group called Old Newspaper Stories. And we don't just limit it to just Giants. We've got all kinds of stuff on there.
Yeah.
And it's really taken off. We've got a big following, and new people are asking to join every day. And we've got some great people involved in the site as well.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a lot of fun, too, going on these sites and just thinking about keywords to looking up. It's like having a brand new resource that you've never had before, because you're looking into the past. It's like a time machine.
Oh, yeah.
Going back and looking at some of these things. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think the digital newspaper archives movement is really taking off. It's going to become even bigger in the next few years, because I think a huge grant was put out to try to digitize all the newspapers possible. And so a lot of the colleges, I think, applied for these federal grants to get the high speed scanners and the optical character recognition software. And some of the sites are incredible how well they're put together. And so far, I don't think the Google robots, which search main pages, I don't think they're searching the newspaper pages very well. So you kind of have to go to those sites to do your research. And so it is. It's almost like another World Wide Web within the World Wide Web.
Well, it's probably a good thing that Google's not picking up on it, because they'll probably start censoring any good information.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? I don't know what's going to happen with it, but it's huge amounts of information that are coming out, and I think we have about 250 members now, and we started this, I think, just a little bit before Christmas time. So in a matter of a month, we've gone from zero members to 250 members. There's hundreds of posts already in the site, and new members every day. I think 5 or 6 people asked to join just today, and so we accepted all of them, and they're on there as well.
Cool. Yeah, it's I liked as well that you put together now an actual database that allows an archive of the dates and the basic data. And tell us about how you did that.
Okay. Yeah. At the very top of old newspaper stories, I have a pinned post. So it's always the very top one. And it's basically says giant skeletons in newspaper database. And what we're trying to do is trying to catalog as many of the newspaper reports as possible that contain stories of skeletons that are over 7 feet tall. And so anybody can do this. You simply click on it, and it's done in Google Docs. Google Docs has a forms that you can create that are linked to Google Docs version of Excel, which categorizes them into columns and rows, which allows you to basically to sort through the data.
It's almost like an Excel document, basically, right?
Yeah, well, there's a form that feeds into the Excel.
Like a spreadsheet.
Yeah, into a spreadsheet. So the form is basically just like a questionnaire. It's like a survey. And so it basically asks about 8 things. The first thing is the newspaper name. So if you find an interesting story, click on that link and it'll open up this little report. And there's 8 things you got to do. You got to put in the newspaper name, the newspaper date, the place where the skeleton was found, and there's a drop-down menu where it lists all 50 states. It lists many of the countries throughout the world, because we're finding more and more in other countries as well. Recently found a site where it's an archive of Australian newspapers, which is some really fascinating things found in those newspapers that I don't think have been ever discovered here in the United States.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting. Even in other languages would be really fascinating if you could, I wonder if they have the ability within those digital search algorithms to actually translate. So if you could look up a certain keyword that would translate into other languages and then,
translate it. That would be very interesting. Not sure how that would work, but for now, I think we need to try to find people who speak both languages. I think Russia is probably one of the biggest areas that could have some amazing stories. And I discovered one of them from Russia from the early 1900s of a giant that had different DNA. And that was also in the Vera files, but this was all the way back in the 20s. So I'm not sure if it's the same. I think they called the Dinovirians, or I can't exactly remember the name that they called this new species, but the DNA was different. And this report back in the 20s, this was before DNA was recognized, and they just basically classified it as a new type of human based upon the structure of the skeleton, because it was so large and so different from most skeletons of today.
Interesting.
Yeah, one of the other things in that database form that you fill out as well is, we want the size of the skeleton, we want the people that were that found the skeleton. And then we also want, if it's given, who has the skeleton in their possession now? Because if once we get a huge database, if we get enough people to help, we can start tracking these people down, just like Bill and Jim Vera did in their story. They actually tracked down the people trying to see, hey, this report says that your family had this skeleton. Do you still have it in your possession? And many of the stories said that these skeletons were sent to the Smithsonian, the Carnegie Institute, and many other museums throughout the world. So where they went, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what's interesting is a database like this would allow us to, you know, especially if we get everybody to upload their own information, because I'm sure there's other databases out there or other people that have collected their own information on giants like these guys we've met. So if we get everybody to upload their information, then we could actually analyze this in a way looking for, you know, universal characteristics or attributes or different places that are most commonly found or whatever, because I think that's the other thing that'd be interesting is, you know, I know we have all these different options. You have timestamp, the newspaper name, newspaper date, place where the skeleton was found, the city, the size of the skeleton, and then we have a link for the webpage where it was found, people who found it, and who has possession of it last, and then you have notes.
Yeah.
So if people could put in notes or different specific attributes, like for instance, I know we've ran into a lot of them that have the story of the six fingers or the double rows of teeth or the red hair.
Yeah.
Those seem to be the three, besides the giant size, the other three attributes that seem to be most commonly attributed to these findings.
Yeah, and the other thing that people can do is they can actually view the database. So they can see everything that's been submitted so far. And as of today, there's 85 reports, 85 unique reports that have been put into the document, everywhere from 7 foot all the way up to some 32-foot skeletons that have been found in different areas. It's absolutely amazing. And what state do you think has the most skeletons found in a report? Just make a guess, maybe.
I don't know. Back east, probably.
Now, right now, the biggest one that we have is California. There's 8 different reports from California. Indiana, by the way, has 6. So there's 6 from Indiana. Yeah. But the biggest, the most reports so far in the whole thing are from Great Britain.
Oh, really?
There's 10 reports from Great Britain right now. So that's kind of interesting to me that we're finding a lot from different places. And, you know, a 33-inch skull is one of them that was found in Russia. That was an absolute amazing find. So there's just,
man.
Yeah. And these are apparently in the Paleontological Museum in St. Petersburg. And that was one of the most interesting stories that I found. There's basically a guy named W.P. Almazelki from Warsaw University. And he basically lectured, and this is a real guy. I looked him up, and he is a real scientist. And this is a story from 1901. And he discovered a new race of giants, which he called the Parasaurius, as I believe it, how you pronounce it. It's again, it's real hard to read some of these newspaper reports because they're so old and the scanning isn't quite perfect on it. But he basically measured a skeleton which was 3 meters from head to feet, perfectly preserved down to the smallest detail, is what it says in there. And it's in the Paleontological Museum in St. Petersburg. And he's done some correspondence with some other scientists, and they're going to try to find more of these. And it says on their second venture out there, they found 30 more skeletons, but none as large as this first one. So they're continuing these excavations. This is all the way back in 1900, and these were found in mounds in Russia. It was by what's called the Dwina River. So, absolutely amazing story that of Russia, and I don't think this has been found in any other sites. But that was one of the stories that, that we recently found in on the old newspaper story site.
It'll be interesting to, like, you know, once we do track down where these skeletons are supposed to be, if these places are still around, actually contacting these places, either on the phone or in person,
and
taping it and seeing, confronting these people and say, okay, well, we have a record that this is the date that this is brought here. This is the scientist who brought it. Can we check this out? You know, what information do you have that we can see from here to, you know, analyze this stuff? Because there seems to be a lot of public outcry to see this stuff. And if you have it, why aren't you showing it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's you know, it's kind of what you know, a lot of people are trying to figure out what happened to these skeletons. Now, just today, another site discovered a really interesting document, and this is on the Real Giants group, and this is a Smithsonian document. It's the 12th annual report from the Bureau of Ethnology to the Secretary of the Smithsonian, 1894. And this is basically what it says. I'll just read the quote from this book. So this is basically admitting that they do have giant skeletons, at least at that time, in 1894. And here's what the quote says. Underneath a layer of shells, the earth was very dark and appeared to be mixed with vegetable mold to a depth of 1 foot. At the bottom of this, resting on the original surface of the ground, was a very large skeleton lying horizontally at full length. Although very soft, the bones were sufficient distinct to allow of careful measurement before attempting to remove them. The length from the base of the skull to the bones of the toes were found to be 7 feet 3 inches. It is probable, therefore, that this individual living was fully 7.5 feet high. Near the original surface, 10 or 12 feet from the center, on the lower side, lying at full length on its back, was one of the largest skeletons discovered by the Bureau agency. The length, as proved by actual measurements, between 7 and 8 feet. It was clearly traceable. So those are two quotes from this report to the Smithsonian from 1894. And this can actually be found at the archive.org site, so where they catalog old books, kind of like, you know, I think Google has one of these sites as well. So that was an amazing discovery just from today that somebody found that I've never seen. So basically, the Smithsonian confirming that we've got two of these.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, like we were saying before, is there seem to be quite a few different stories on, like, this red hair connection, these giants having red hair over and over again. What do you think that's all about? I don't get that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be, again, a genetic marker. Hair color is a trait that is passed down genetically. And this could be an indication that these might be a descendant, and they may have a small amount of the original Nephilim blood in them, or Nephilim DNA. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they joke about that too. So, well, does that mean they're 7 footers? Does that mean they're Nephilim? Well, not necessarily. I think humans have the ability to grow 7 foot and even taller if they have a pituitary gland problem. But when we see reports of large people that are extremely strong and large size, that means it's probably not the pituitary gland problem, because that usually leads to weakness, but a genetic trait that is being passed down of large size. And there are tribes in Africa that average around 7 feet tall today, and they may have, you know, they may be linked to these original sons of Anak, you know, from the post flood. We don't know, you know, we still need to find DNA from one of these old creatures to see if we can tie this together. And possibly this this new human that was found in Russia, the new type of human, maybe that's the link. But it's brand new research that needs to be done on these types of things.
Yeah, you know, and what's interesting too is, you know, bringing up the gland thing, is the whole pineal gland thing. Is amazing how many different things have come up on the pineal gland. One particular really interesting article in the Washington Times from 1920 that talks about brunettes and blondes and kind of talking about the differences between blondes and brunettes and the temperaments between them being connected to their pineal gland.
Oh, and this is all part of the pituitary gland.
No, it's talking about the pineal gland. It says...
Oh, pineal gland. Okay.
Yeah, it says...
So that's the gland that's between your eyes, basically.
Yeah, the third eye. You know, yeah. This thing, I mean, the pineal gland, there's a huge connection here with the pineal gland over and over again through secret societies that they're really big into that I'm trying to kind of put together. I'm going to do a podcast with Fourth Watch Radio and Justin Fall.
Oh, yeah.
I recently did a podcast with him on shamanism. Just got to talking so much. We had so much information to go over. We decided to do another podcast. It should be coming up soon. But yeah, this article says the gland of the blonde-haired women is smaller and its secretions are less, while its structure is more compact. Scientifically speaking, emotions are a reaction of the blood and nerves. It is manifest differences in this gland and the secretions willing to produce corresponding differences in the motion and character of its owner. So they basically are saying that this can all be traced not only to the pineal gland, but also to the hair color based upon the melanin or the colors our skin tone. So which is really interesting. It's not as much about the skin tone that I've learned, and that's what's kind of the misnomer. It's more about these granules around the glands themselves. So around the pineal gland, these melanin granules are these crystalline structures that can actually change shape to communicate frequencies and pick up on frequencies. And this seems to be a very well-known thing through these secret societies. And not only that these secret societies were eating pineal glands, charging them that colors our skin tone. So what's really interesting, it's not as much about the skin tone that I've learned, and that's what's kind of the misnomer. It's more about these granules around the glands themselves. So around the pineal gland, these melanin granules are these crystalline structures that can actually change shape to communicate frequencies and pick up on frequencies. And this seems to be a very well-known thing through these secret societies. And not only that these secret societies were eating pineal glands. There seem to be all these weird connections. There's even there's that movie and book that's called Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and it has a roundabout talk about a guy saying, you know, that there was a satanic group out there that was going out there hunting people down to take their pineal glands out to eat them. And that he'd like to have a pineal gland right about now to be chewing on. He cracks some joke about it.
Oh, wow.
And that these people within these groups have actually known this for a long time. The Skull and Bone Society does an actual ritual called the Obscene Rite, in which they eat a pineal gland, supposedly of a, I guess as they say, it's an animal, but some people have said it's a human.
Oh, wow.
There was a guy actually arrested here not too long ago for taking glands of humans, an actual mortician, and upon death he was removing the glands of people. And what he was doing with them, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If we look deeper, he was probably selling them on a black market. And if you go into the albinos in Africa, they are so sought after that, I mean, there's a huge, huge problem right now with albinos being killed by witch doctors and hunted down by shamans for their body parts. and that their blood and body parts are of such value that they're actually having to put these albinos in special camps to protect them.
Oh, wow.
You know, why albinos are so sought after is, and why this keeps coming up is the interesting thing. And I even found a book that had a guy talking about, and this guy was a, I don't know if he's a channeler or something, or what exactly it was. But he had a society called the Koresh Society back in the like 1800s, and he wrote a book called The Flaming Sword. And he talks about how the key to evolving all of humanity is actually removing all of our pineal glands.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's just crazy how this keeps popping up. And the pine cone is the other thing. You know, the pine cone iconography and the pine cone within art is just everywhere through all these different cultures, and it's always connected to this same idea. And how the ancient people, you know, connected the pine cone to the pineal gland is just pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, and it's just interesting that the pituitary gland and the pineal gland are basically located opposite of each other from the very top of the spine that goes up into the brain, the cortex part of the brain. And then the other thing that's interesting that I just thought of just now when you're talking about it is that in the really popular show The Walking Dead, I think it's season one, where they went into this underground facility to try to get answers of what's happening. They've met a scientist in there, and the scientist showed them a video of the brain, of what happens to the brain when they die and then they come back to life as a zombie. The pineal gland is the exact location where they were showing that life was still existing on that show.
Oh, wow.
So really? I just made that connection because I just looked up the location of the pineal gland. And so that's kind of a weird coincidence, but I'm sure it wasn't a coincidence.
Man, that is really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the deeper I dig into that, the more stranger and stranger it gets. And back in these newspaper articles, they were pretty open and blatant about it. We've got a whole kind of stream of articles on the pineal gland, and one of them, in fact, has this whole talk about how it makes things into giants.
Yeah,
and so I've got a new theory. You know, we know that the Nephilim supposedly were giants, but could it be possible the reason they were giants is because they were cannibalizing certain parts of bodies?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, would the Bible necessarily go into the detail? Would it just say they're cannibals, or would it say they seek after a certain part of the brain to eat out, you know, to make themselves giant? You know, it probably would just say they're cannibals, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe that's just it. Maybe they, you know, because these stories seem to indicate that they take the pineal glands out of chickens, mice, rabbits, cows, and it has to be out of the baby. Pineal glands from babies fed to other babies will make them grow to twice the size.
Wow.
And it happens over and over. They got pictures of it, and you can see it's on the site there of these chickens twice the size, and there's multiple articles from different people doing the same thing. There's one from 1914, a guy that was doing it, and then another completely different doctor in another city that was doing it, in another city in 1920.
I think I found a report on large growth just today, too. And they did experiments with the rats, and then they were saying that a human baby could grow to 10.5 feet tall by 5 years old, is what the scientist was claiming. And so that, I think that was just today that I found that one. So that's on the old newspaper site group as well. So yeah, all these little connections go deep.
Yeah, yeah, it's just. You don't know where to stop because it just keeps getting stranger and stranger. And, you know, you could go down all these different rabbit trails, but the key is trying to pull this back into biblical scripture. How does this relate back to anything that we can build a bigger picture off of? How can we can actually tie this into something important that is relatable to our walk and relatable to witnessing to other people, because that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, kinds of weird things that a person can get into, but the main thing is focusing it back to the reality in which we're living.
Yeah. You know, going back to the red haired giants, I found one of the reports that was on the old newspaper site about the a tribe of Indians, which is called the Sadukas. And this is from a newspaper report from 1931, and it's titled "The Lost Race of Red-Haired Giants Lived in Nevada." And they were huge. And the scientist is named John T. Reed. And he had discovered a skeleton that was about 7.5 feet tall. And some of the skeletons which were found in the same area still have the red beards and red hair on there. The reason I think this one's fascinating is that it relates to an old Indian story. And the story says there's a feud that went back for generations, and the chief actually recounted the story to him in 1931. And the redheads were called the Sadukas, and they were exterminated 5 or 6 centuries ago, is what he said, and only 6 women were left in the final massacre, and they settled in what is now Lovelock and Fallon region of Nevada. And he said that, and the chief said that traces of their blood still can be found in a few Indians now living here. He says that there are still some Indians in that region that have the red hair that came from that original tribe of giants who they eventually wiped out. And it must have been in the 1300s, according to this, 1300 to 1400s, when these skeletons were taken out by the Indians of that area. So that's an interesting story as well. Yeah.
Hmm.
And then there's another report of a group of scientists, and they're departing to hunt for bones of giants. So that's the story. And this is from 1930. Again, I mean, these aren't this is out of Tucson, Arizona, and three scientists are going to Mexico, and again, following a story of an ancient legend of Indians. And they found some skeletons, and they're out to try to find some more. One of them is Dr. Cummings, and he's on this quest to confirm this legend. And in this one, it basically says the race lived about 3,000 years ago, and they found several skeletons, several skulls, and they're being led by a guy named Coker. And the stories are from the Yakul Indians, and who knows? I mean, there's just so many things back there. And again, a lot of these things get lost to the oral traditions of the Indians. Many of these things have also been lost. So a lot of times, the only time we can get hints of their oral traditions is in these newspaper stories. And many of them you have to get from the local newspapers, not the big ones, because the only certain stories go through the telegraphs to get transmitted to all the newspapers throughout the country. Most stories are local stories. So it's going to take an enormous amount of searching to look through all these newspapers from all the different states. I currently just went through the state of Utah and did my search term was again giant skeletons and found all kinds of stuff. But
Wow.
It's there's a lot of states to look through.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, and there's pages and pages and pages of them, and that's the thing, is you gotta, find the key words, but then you gotta still go in there and find out how it's pertinent and whether it's a story that's worth reading, because there's lots of different stories that may have, giant skeleton in them, but be talking about something totally different. So, but I've found that you even find things you may not, you're looking up one subject and it may go into something totally different that brings you off on another trail. That's, that's kind of how this whole redhead thing has been, and trying to find out the whole origin of the albino, which brings you into the pineal gland, that brings you into gigantism and all this other stuff. It's just, one thing leads to another.
Oh, yeah.
I know the other thing you'd found is a lot of things on sea serpents.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I found two again just today that were really interesting on sea serpents. So one of them was in Patagonia, and again, this has pictures. A lot of these pictures are drawings or representations of what was seen, but pretty amazing article. It is about the Patagonian plesiosaur, and the headline is, "How about a Patagonian plesiosaur for a pet?" And there's a scientific expedition going to the South American wilderness to find if there are any more plesiosaurs still living.
Hmm.
And the story reports that a lake in that area, there's been recent sightings of a creature in that lake, a large creature, plesiosaur type creature that's living in that lake in the Patagonia area. And they're trying to confirm whether or not that's true. So
wow.
Here it is. They're on an expedition to see if it's true. So it's kind of the cryptozoologists of the 1920s. This is a story from 1923, and the professor was Elmer S. Riggs of the Field Museum in Chicago, and he's the guy that's going on this epic voyage to try to find this creature. So that was an interesting one. Another one actually has a real photograph of a 20-foot-long sea serpent.
Yeah, I saw that.
And you can see the two guys.
Yeah.
It looks like a huge snake is what it looks like. And it's 20 feet long, and it washed up on Provincetown, Massachusetts.
I've never seen that picture before. That's really interesting. It looks, you see the bones of it and everything.
Yeah, I've never seen that as well. And so that's kind of an amazing one. Another story is the Komodo dragon. Because if you remember, scientists didn't believe the reports because people were saying, hey, there's huge lizards that are over 10 feet long. They're calling them dragons, you know, because that's what they called lizards back then. There's huge dragons that live in the on these islands, on Komodo Island and some of the other islands in this area. And scientists said, no, we know everything. You guys are just seeing things, swamp gas. You know, and then this is the story of the guy that actually found one of these and brought it back to a zoo. And the reports that he received said that they can reach 23 feet in length. So today, I think the biggest one that's ever been verified today is 13 feet long. But that's immense. But who knows? I mean, there could have been 23 footers. You never know.
Yeah. Amazing.
And the other report that relates to that Komodo dragon was the gorilla story. And again, it's another tale of scientists basically refusing to believe the eyewitness reports. People had said, hey, there's huge gorillas in this region. They're absolutely gigantic. They're attacking us. We're seeing them. And they're saying, oh, no. There could never be a monkey or a gorilla that big. We know all the types of monkeys. We've never seen one. You guys are exaggerating. You're not seeing things correctly. It's swamp gas. all these things. They refuse to believe. But finally, a rogue scientist goes on an expedition and kills one and brings it back. And the hand of this gorilla weighs 6 pounds. The whole body is 720 pounds. It's 7 feet, 6 inches tall.
Wow.
And he describes the whole thing. And finally, they have to believe, you know, and I think so it kind of relates to the Bigfoot stories of today.
Yeah.
That, you know, they just, you know, they think it's swamp gas and mass hallucinations and, you know, it's just deliberate hoaxes. Well, some of them might be hoaxes, but not all of them.
Well, and that's, you know, that's kind of seems part of the narrative is that anytime there's something that's a truth that needs to be revealed, there's a lot of disinformation and lies attached to it to discredit it, you know? It's like, you know, they attach all kinds of nonsense or get people involved in that ideology that are kind of like that don't have any type of credibility or have done hoaxes or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of on purpose to mislead the masses into thinking that's how everybody is that's into that particular belief system.
And again, they kind of use the same technique over and over again. The disinformation experts, they're self-proclaimed skeptics today, and they're skeptical. What they do is they'll bring up one hoax, and they'll say, "See, this is a hoax, so they're all hoaxes." That's their basic premise, that if one of them is a hoax, they're all hoaxes, and since we don't see any today, none of these stories must be true. None of them must be reliable. And you see that time and time again.
Yeah.
And that's how they get discounted, because people will see all of these reports and somebody will prove that one of them is a hoax. And then they associate every story that isn't necessarily or hoaxes. But in their minds, they kind of discredit everything because of one person saying that one of them is a hoax. And it works. That's the thing. That's why these skeptics are able to get away with it, and they're pretty smug about themselves. But
yeah,
in the end, most of them are actually wrong, and they're very weak in their arguments, because they always will give one account and then basically discount all the things that are unexplained, that they can't have an explanation to.
Yeah.
Now there's another. There's another interesting story about another plesiosaurus type creature that washed up. This is in 1897. And again, this has a picture of the creature washed up on the shore, a drawing in this case, because again, they couldn't send pictures through a telegraph. So they had to describe him. But it was a strange saurian washed ashore on Hyannis and is believed to be the descendant of a prehistoric plesiosaur. So I think this one was over 20 feet tall, and this was in West Virginia, I believe, is where this washed up. So another interesting story. It's a whole page story, and very, very interesting. That's what's cool about a lot of these is that and this washed up in Hyannis, Massachusetts, and that was a really cool story as well.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that is kind of interesting about our site is how many great researchers are using the old newspaper story site.
Yeah.
We got guys like Dustin Nafe, and he's a guy that has a website called messagetoeagle.com, and he has all kinds of really good research on a vast array of different stories, and a lot of them are ancient, unexplained skeletons and hieroglyphics, tombs, all kinds of neat things are on this guy's site. And Dustin Nafe is a photographer and does a great job. He frequents our site pretty well. Another guy is Gary Wayne, and he's an author who's written stuff on mythology and some other books connecting biblical type things. He wrote a book called The Genesis 6 Conspiracy. And another great guy that's on the site quite a bit. And
nice.
We've also got a interview lined up for the guy that runs the Greater Ancestors Museum, the Greater Ancestors World Museum. And you can go to his website, greaterancestors.com. And Chris Lessie's put together a great site, and he's got a great museum. And his basic premise is that in the past, all things were greater, greater technology, greater humans, greater animals. And we've kind of showed that as well. And we did the podcast. I think it was our second or third podcast. We did the one on giant pumpkins. And
yeah,
a lot of people haven't related that to generations and how it only takes a few generations to bring back the original genetics of something to make it a little closer to how it was originally created. And basically we showed that once they crossbred these two different varieties of the gourd of these pumpkins, the size increased from around 400 pounds maximum to now 2,300 pounds. And this has only taken about 30 generations. So at least in plants, if you took 30 generations and connected this DNA back together. I think plants use RNA, but so it might be a little bit different, but who knows? I mean, plants, you can do a 1 year. So you can do things a little faster than you can in people or something else.
Yeah.
But, because the generations take longer, but pretty amazing how that can happen.
Yes, it kind of reminds me of, have you heard of that whole Nazi cow thing? Where they found out over in Germany during Hitler's time, they actually wanted to go find the original cow kind when they produced what they called the Heck cow or bull, which was a very ancient version of cows, a very, giant muscular bulls with huge horns, and they're super, super aggressive. And matter of fact, recently there's a story over in Germany where they actually had to kill a bunch of them because they were attacking so many people. They call them like the pit bull cows or Nazi cows because they were just like wild or something. But if you think about that, all dogs come from original dog kind, probably like a wolf type animal. And how, wolves and foxes are very skittish and very aggressive by nature. You can actually pull out certain attributes by picking out the most aggressive or the most docile of each litter and keep breeding those. And it's incredible how much you can change different animals within a certain kind, but they will never cease being that kind. A dog will never change outside of it to be a non-dog.
Yeah.
And, I think we should do a podcast on that, although it'd be probably go on forever, a podcast on evolution, the ridiculousness and bait and switch of from micro to macro evolution that they use. But
oh, yeah. 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 We talk a little bit about it just about every podcast about evolution.
That's true.
It's a very weak argument.
Yep.
Yeah, the other guys, we got a guy named Micah who runs the Refium 23 site, and he's a big contributor to the site as well. And
yeah,
he's the guy that he originally found the 26.5-inch spearhead story, and I originally found it on his site. So he's done a lot of research and done some great work. And there's a lot of other people too. That's just a few that frequently visit the site, and they're big time researchers. They're really into it and doing some cool things. So I really appreciate all the great people that are on there and are real excited about things. So,
yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I was just thinking of too, is that, connecting creatures back together. I remember one of our first couple podcasts too, we talked about, Pliny the Elder and his, bestiary, and where he gave these detailed descriptions of creatures that lived at his time. And one of them was called a pard. And, today we have lions and we have leopards. And they said a lion and a pard are the two creatures that made the leopard. And now the pard is an extinct creature. But so,
that's weird.
Again, part of that lion kind. But what was the original lion type creature like? Things have been split off into different subsets as the original DNA split into different groups and got separated.
Yeah.
But if they come back together, I think we can get some pretty good genetics back.
Yeah, like saber-toothed tiger, is that a, an actual different kind of cat, or is that, just an actual mutation
with
certain species?
I actually found a story about one scientist said that he couldn't have eaten meat because his teeth were so big he couldn't open his mouth to actually kill things. So what he said that the teeth were actually like vampire teeth, and you suck blood out of dead animals. He said that's
what like they had holes through them or something, like a straw.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he said. So that's on there somewhere. You can see the story, and again, it has pictures on it. So,
I mean, were they hollow like straws?
I don't know.
I mean, it seems like something you could easily disprove.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a site or a show on one time talking about that as well. trying to recreate the bite of a saber-toothed tiger and, you know, trying to figure out, like, how they would use those because they couldn't figure that out. Same thing. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be – it seems like they'd be more cumbersome than advantageous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, 12 inches of, you know, I mean, what are they trying to puncture there if they can't even open their mouth?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, they possibly might have been for taking down gigantic prey like mammoths.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of people to believe, yeah. Yeah, here it is right there. Saber-toothed tigers drink blood, say scientists. So, and that's from 1922. So, I don't know. I didn't read the whole story to see what it was about, but... There's a lot of interesting things. You know, there's a story about the giant rock bird, this huge bird that it wasn't a real creature. You know, there's a picture of an unknown fish caught off England. It's 18 feet long. There's an 8-foot skeleton found in Idaho that was sent to the Smithsonian. Just time after time, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, there really is. There's lots of interesting stories. You know, one of the other things we ran across was the Bohemian Grove. You know, I just looked that up out of curiosity, and there was just story after story on the Bohemian Grove back in the early 1900s, where they were just cavalier about talking about the cremation of care. They have the ceremonies with Pan and Atonement of Pan, and go into detail about how all this stuff is occult related, and they celebrate things just.
Oh yeah, it was. They used the media for their for their advantage back then, because I remember they had pictures of the actors, because they had, it was a huge presentation. I mean, they had world class actors doing the performances and all dressed up, and you know,
yeah, they name names. They give the entire list of all the people that attended. They even, you know, explain that these are connected to Theosophy and Madame Blavatsky and all these, like, occult-related things. I think just people were very into the occult back then in a way that it was almost like, the Roaring Twenties of Berlin, for instance. You know, that was a thing that was almost orchestrated by Hitler. It was the same thing happening in America. They're trying to kind of like really bring out the pagan ideas of man. There was this huge resurgence of paganism.
Yeah, the 20s, I think, were a bigger change in the philosophy of culture than there even was in the 60s. And just like what you said, there was it became the fad. It became the thing that the well-to-do and the uppity people would do, and because they had money, they didn't have to. It's very easy for a lot of people. There was a class of people that had nothing but time,
yeah,
and nothing but money. They didn't have to work because it was so easy to make so much money at that time for a few.
Well, people were so isolated as well. They could be isolated by a small group or network of people that would just take advantage of them or isolate themselves from any outside information and get caught up within all these different societies or following different channelers or different teachers and gurus that are basically all teaching the same type of, deceptions. That just repackaged in different ways. And it's amazing how people kind of, if you follow the whole spiritism movement, how it just kind of has changed over time. And just, you know, like, and the same with aliens, you know, they used to, these channelers would be in touch with people saying that the aliens lived on the moon and on Venus and Mars and stuff. And then when we found out that was, you know, impossible and there's no life on the moon and Mars and Venus, you know, all of a sudden, oh, we're actually from the Pleiades, and or we're from Alpha Centauri, or, you know, these far off places now when they used to live inside the hollow earth and, you know, all these other places. Just interesting how the disguises slowly change while information is discovered, then they'll just change with the times.
Yeah. Another interesting story that was found about a week ago is from 1906, February 23rd, 1906. It was about in the pit they found 63 skeletons. It was a mass burial of some sort, and they just kept digging up skeleton after skeleton after skeleton. One of the skeletons was huge. It was about 7.5 feet tall, and the skull was abnormally shaped, and it had it really caused a flurry of excitement. And it says here that a lot of the more superstitious believe that the bones of the devil were laid there, because the skull, after being carefully examined by medical man, who did not hesitate to say that these bones or protuberances from the back of the ears were more distinct and much longer than those of the skulls today, but they couldn't explain what they were. So it had something sticking out from the back of its head like horns. And so, and this is the only skeleton out of that that had that peculiar.
They have pictures of that, or is that just?
I couldn't find any pictures of that. And they also said that a lot of these people were burned at the stake, they say.
Wow.
So anyway, this is found by a guy named state geologist Blotchy, and this was found in Indiana. So 63 different castles in Henry County, in 4 miles northwest of Newcastle. So maybe, who knows, maybe we've got one of our listeners from Indiana. Maybe this is right in their neck of the woods, and they can kind of confirm this story.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of the disinformation people about the skeletons, you know, they say, you know, they're all misidentified, you know, and some of them may be, you know, if you got a 30-foot human skeleton, you know, yeah, maybe, and all they say is they found the femur, that's probably misidentified. But when you find skulls and they're buried in a crypt with, you know, not just buried in the dirt, but they actually have a burial ground there, and they have copper ornaments around their bones, pretty good that indication that that's a human.
Yeah.
And the skeptics just ignore these. They don't talk about when they have jewelry, when they have weapons, when they have ornaments around them. They just kind of ignore those, and they don't talk about them. But
yeah,
the ones that could possibly be or misidentified, oh yeah, these are just all mastodon bones, every last one of them. And that seems to be their mantra that they'll continue to beat. And I don't know why, you know, it's...
I mean, that just seems amazing that anyone would ever mistake a mastodon skull for a human skull. I mean, what humans do you know with giant tusks coming out of their face?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I saw an old show on the History Channel of what they thought the Cyclops was, and they showed, like, the hips of a mastodon, and it kind of looks like it has one eye in the middle, and they thought the people just, like, saw these bones, and kind of in their mind they thought, oh, this must be a Cyclops or something. I mean, who knows? Maybe they did, but, you know, it's just they're really stretching the envelope to come up with these wild theories to explain away eyewitness reports, you know.
I mean, I bet ancient people were more likely to see skeletons than people of today.
Oh yeah, who today goes out and butchers anything?
Exactly. I mean, these
almost people, no one.
Yeah. To think that they didn't know what a skeleton looked like, or, you know, or did that stupid. That's such a common, you know, way to spot these guys that are just putting out disinformation is how they just discredit all ancient people as just idiots, when in fact, you know,
yeah,
they were so much smarter than us in so many ways.
Oh yeah. You know, we even found some stories from Oregon, too. We found a story about a 2,000-pound sea monster that washed up on the coast of Oregon in 1950. And no one to this day has been able to – and that was a real picture. There's the people, like, pulling it around. So they don't know what it is, you know. They have no – it says experts saw it. They have no clue what it is. So it was at the town of DeLake. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is, you know, we think that we get all the news that's out there. Even today, you know, we think, well, if there's a big story that's out there, we're going to hear about it. But the fact of the matter is there's lots of local stories and local events that happen like something just like that, you know, of something washing up on the beach, or somebody digging something up, or finding some strange anomaly, or seeing some weird thing in the sky that are only reported locally. You know, the next week they're forgotten about, and this stuff has happened throughout every time. You know, I mean, it's not just old newspaper stories, but just going back through the local stories that didn't make national news, but were local strange events and stories to different areas.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to find, you know, some of these things, kind of the smoking guns. That's kind of what Bill and Jim did, is they went to the microfiche, and they were actually able to find a couple of those photos in the local libraries to confirm some of the things that of these skeletons. I think they're out there, either in people's personal belongings or in these microfiche, if they've kept some of these records. So hope we can find some of these things.
Yep.
So yeah, it goes on and on.
Yep.
So there's all kinds of cool stuff that have happened just in the last, week. We found, you know, hundreds of stories that are just great.
Yeah. I mean, the more people that contribute, the better. 'Cause like you said, there's so much stuff to go through. The, you know, a group of people couldn't really do it. A small group of people couldn't do it all. We need as many people as we can. And if we get people in different states that kind of look within their neck of the woods, then we can kind of investigate all these different areas.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the interesting things that I also found was a book that was written in 1911. It was called Creation, Time, and Eternity by a guy named Jacob Sechrist. And in this book, this is a Christian author. He talks about the that Darwinists at that time, this is 1911, they don't believe in the existence of giants because it doesn't fit with their paradigm. And so what they're trying, so he, even at the time when we suppose that all these things are kind of getting hidden away back in the, you know, between 1910 and 1930, he's confirming that this is happening.
Hmm.
And you can find this on forgottenbooks.com and read portions of it. So, and it says they just cannot accept the facts of a larger race because it doesn't fit into their beliefs that we came from monkeys, which are smaller. And so what he says is they ignore the facts deliberately. And so here's a guy from 100 years ago that's basically saying exactly what we're saying today, is that these people refuse to believe, not based upon the facts or the science, but on their belief system. It doesn't fit in their belief systems. They refuse.
Hmm. I mean, that's, you know, if you actually, that's what's really weird. If you go back to Darwin's time and what they were actually believing and putting forth as science, what these guys were all connected to, there were a bunch of these people were connected, you know, to all kinds of crazy ideas. I mean, a lot of them were channelers and into spiritism and the occult, and put forth ideas about the hollow earth and different things, you know, that were just, you know, really, you know, off the wall theories that they connected to it. But you could tell that a lot of these theories and connections were not scientific, but more spiritual leanings that they had, that they wanted to somehow connect into science. There was this whole, idea of merging science and spirituality, the same thing that's happening again today with transhumanism.
Yeah, it's, you know, yeah, it never ends, you know. One more thing too, that was there a lot of stories from that time were from legends of huge snakes, you know, that inhabited different areas. One from is Australia, called the Arkaroo, and this is of a huge 30 to 40 foot snake that was said to inhabit this area of Australia, and they still have a park to this day that you can visit that shows kind of representation of what they think Arkaroo look like. Another one was in the Americas, and this is in Pennsylvania, and I hope somebody can confirm this. It's called the Broad Top Snake of Pennsylvania, and it was apparently a 40-foot long snake that inhabited Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And had been seen for many, many years. So, again, all these things just are pretty amazing. So
that's really amazing. Yep, it's incredible. You know, we just keep inviting people. Keep wanting to invite people to come join. Definitely come check out Old Newspaper Stories if you haven't already. Join our site there at Facebook. You want to close out? I know you went and saw the Exodus movie. Tell us a little bit about that in closing.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, we did the report on the Noah story. And this one isn't much better. I thought the first part of the movie was pretty good. I mean, they did pretty good showing Moses while he was in Egypt and after he left Egypt. But right when he came, it started going haywire right when he went up and saw the burning bush. And the burning bush apparently was a creepy little kid. So, I don't know, this 5-6-year-old kid. But he went up in the mountain. He hit his head. See, apparently he went up there and there was like a landslide and some rocks hit him in the head and he was knocked out. And so, you know, his wife and everybody else was saying, hey, you're just hallucinating. You didn't really see anything. And yet he believed it. And so, you know, he had to kind of get mended, but then he left his family because of the hallucination is what his wife told him. You know, you're going to leave your family for hallucination. And he did. And when he goes to Egypt, all the miracles aren't miracles. They're all explained. So for instance, the water turning to blood was some crocodiles eating about 4 guys. And then the crocodiles started eating each other and a bunch of blood got into the river and somehow turned the whole water of the Nile red because of crocodiles eating a few guys and then eating each other.
What?
So there was kind of this big, cool thing, you know, pretty cheesy graphics, tell the truth, too. It looked like a, you know, a sci-fi station Dino Croc or something like that, as far as the special effects.
Yeah, I heard that the special effects were, like, cartoony almost.
Yeah, they weren't very good. So basically it portrayed Moses as a psychotic, delusional man who thought he talked to God, but it was just all in his own mind. And it actually many times showed him talking to no one because someone would kind of be looking over a bush and seeing him kind of sitting there arguing with somebody. And then it would pan back to Moses and he's talking to this little kid, and the little kid who's supposed to be God wants everybody dead, and he's a vengeful God, and Moses tries to talk him out of killing everybody, but
so he's schizophrenic.
He's schizophrenic, and then God's an evil God, and the Egyptian gods are good, you know, and kills off all the babies, and several times in the movie they talk about, you know, how could your God kill off babies? What kind of God do you worship? You know, that's wow. That's Ramses saying that, and you know they fail to mention that Ramses killed all the, you know, the babies of the Hebrews. They just kind of left that out for some reason.
Yeah, sounds like it's a Gnostic based film, like
yeah, all naturally seeks explanations, and you know basically getting real lucky. They crossed at low tide across the river, and there wasn't really any, you know, water.
Misunderstood natural events.
Yeah, just all happened to happen at the right time. So, yeah, really disappointing. And I thought the actors were pretty good actors that they had in it, but the story just turned bizarre and crazy that if somebody didn't know the Bible and they saw that, they just, I don't know what they would think. You know, they think the whoever, whatever god they worship is evil, and I guess that's what they're trying to do in the end.
Yeah,
is to discount Christianity and the Hebrew faith. So
yeah, I mean that's what's so sad about, you know, so many of the people out there that they don't have a background to discern the difference between fantasy and fiction, and they literally think this is what Christians believe. I mean, they'll go to a movie like Noah or Exodus and think, man, yeah, I thought Christians were crazy before, but then I saw Noah. Now I really know they're whacked out.
Yeah, yeah. So it is. It's too bad, and that's, you know, but it just shows the kind of world we're living in. There's an attack on Christianity, and, you know, we need some hope vindication, so...
Yeah. Speaking of which, we got a new song we just finished up called that Ho Vindication. Time for Kent Hovind's case here. They've moved this case back now to February 9th. Mike Myers is putting a video together for us. Justin Fall with Fourth Watch Radio is doing the production and mixing on it. So through the guys that are helping me out, have brought to another level. So really appreciate all these guys' help. It's been a blessing. But looking forward to releasing that and hopefully raising some funds for Kent. But anyway, anything else you want to talk about before we...
Well, no, just some of the things that are in the works. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that about the new song. I'm anxious to hear it and see what's going on and just praying for Kent and in his trial that he's able to be released and get back out and be a champion for Christ and the fight against evolution.
Yeah. So. Yeah, hopefully they'll just throw this case out and it won't even go to trial. That's the hope, because it's ridiculous. I mean, the fact that they would just continue to keep him there after 8 years is just insane. So we'll definitely demand some Ho Vindication. We got the Ho Vindication compilation coming out with some other artists as well, like Ninja Scroll and Sam Swanson with God's Property Rodeo. Definitely stay tuned for that.
And we're going to close out tonight with a very special song. I got an email from a listener, a fellow named Andy Jennings with Dissident Prophet. Now, if you haven't heard of the group Dissident Prophet, definitely look them up. They've got some incredible Christian music, great brothers in Christ, and they love what we're doing. We love what they're doing. And just coincidentally, they have this song that they had made entitled Digging for the Truth. So here it is, Digging for the Truth by Dissident Prophet. And until next time, good night and God bless.
Lies are many and the truth is rare. The blind lead the blind in Vanity Fair. The truth don't come easy, you got to seek. Won't interrupt you while you quietly sleep. You gotta dig for the truth until you find it. You gotta dig for the truth until you find it. You gotta dig for the truth until you find it. Get down on your knees. Get down on your knees. Men dread the truth beneath their feet. Foolishness shouts out to men passing in the street. The treasure is hidden in this age of deceit. You gotta get your own pick and dig real deep. You gotta dig for the truth. We'll be right back. one. Refusing the rule of the risen sun. Fools in high places, ruling over you. Holding the aces as they lie to you. You gotta dig for truth until you find it. You gotta dig for truth.